My fellow plebs, River is setting a new standard in Bitcoin. At river.com, you'll pay zero fees when you dollar cost average. Truly the best way to build your Bitcoin wealth. All Bitcoin at River is held in secure cold storage with 100% full reserves. There's no need to wonder what's happening behind the scenes. Your Bitcoin is your Bitcoin to withdraw at any time. Additionally, River lets you make Bitcoin payments via the Lightning Network, offers a Lightning integration for developers, and allows you to mine Bitcoin directly to your River account. River has a level of service that is unheard of in this industry, including phone support, private client advisors, and the ability to designate beneficiaries to inherit your Bitcoin wealth. River has become the premium name in Bitcoin that anyone can easily access. Sure, you have a place to buy Bitcoin, but have you tried River? See and feel the difference at river.com and the River iOS app, the preferred partner of Bitcoin Magazine.
Thank you, Miami, for the last 3 years in this amazing city. The whole world shut down, but Miami welcomed us with open arms. We want to show Bitcoin to the whole world. We are taking the conference on the road to set the stage for Bitcoin in a new city. Nashville. Bitcoin 2024 is coming to Nashville in Tennessee, a city that is known as a music and freedom city. Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville from July 25th to 27th.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another Thursday FedWatch. Big show for you today. Bitcoin, Binance, BRICS, ETF news, SEC news, and more news out of China. What's going on, Nolan? Big news week. How are you?
Summer, the dog days are over, it looks like. Summer coming to an end. Looks like people are back at work. So much happened this week. Crazy.
Yeah, like you said, you've been waiting for the BRICS summit. So we have a bunch of news out of the BRICS summit. That kind of marks the end of the dog days, as well as Jackson Hole going on. But we have no news out of Jackson Hole until tomorrow. So we're going to have to cover that on next week's show. But those are kind of the capstones, I think, to the dog days of summer, wouldn't you say?
Indeed. We got our Labor Day weekend coming up, which I think marks the real sort of back to business. I know that our own event, Bitcoin Amsterdam, October 12th to 13th, really trying to harness that sort of back to school spirit. And you're going to see our agenda is going to be published that second week back. We're going to be publishing a public agenda. Still be a draft version, of course, always possibility of changing things. But everyone out there can look forward to that mid-September. And we're going to be talking about energy policy in Europe, right? We're going to see if Greta, what she thinks about our agenda and if it's in line with her goals for Europe. I don't know if she's going to be happy with what we have to say, but we hope she's invited. We're inviting Greta this year.
Open invitation.
Yeah.
All right, cool, guys. Well, if those topics sound good to you, make sure you like, comment, subscribe. We do have our Rumble versus YouTube battle to see which platform we can get the most views on. And another plug for me up front, bitcoinandmarkets.com. That's my website where I do another podcast, my Bitcoin and Markets show. And check out the Telegram where we go back and forth all day about macro, all sorts of macro topics, not just Bitcoin, but we, you know, the last couple of days we've been talking demographics over there. So check out t.me/Bitcoin and Markets. All right, let's dive into Bitcoin, Nolan. So the Bitcoin price, we had the big dip. I think during the show last week, we were just starting this dip down.
We sure were, yeah. And I think it happened the first time I checked after the show. It just kept sinking.
Yeah, but the volatility only lasted for about 36 hours. Mm-hmm. And then now we're right back down straight to, you know, flat, no volatility left. People are waiting for a BART to form, an inverted BART, I guess you could call it. Mm-hmm. But we haven't seen that yet. So what are your thoughts on price? You can see on this chart, I have the red line for the September 1st ETF deadline that we'll be getting into here in a second. But yeah, what are your thoughts on price?
Yeah, this last week really did surprise me. I was not mentally even charting this. I thought it was going to be bounce along in a tighter band than this. So, but I thought, again, it was prescient to what you were saying last week. So I got to stop ever even doubting your predictions, because you said if it broke and it broke, it tumbles, and it tumbled. Whereas I said, no, you know, it'll go back up and stay in the tight band. And no, indeed, we fell off the bike here, it looks like.
Well, I have been very surprised with the thud that it created at the bottom. There was no bounce at all. It just like splat. And now it has been flat again down here, just above 25,000. We'll see if that holds. What else did I want to say about this? Well, let's go to the next slide, because
I think it still feels the same way. You know, as a Bitcoiner, I have that feeling of just don't have the capacity right now to even manage the bounces, which is typical of this time in the cycle, right? We've all sort of survived a few years of downward trend. So the whole industry feels seized in this same tight band.
Yeah, I mean, the behavior of the price is very interesting. And a lot of people are speculating that's because Binance is systematically selling off their Bitcoin to protect the BNB coin. And if we go to the next slide, that is the BNB. And you can see, you might have to take our heads out of there, Chris. The BNB, it was trying to hold about 220. It has touched, I think, all the way down to like 203 or something now. But it is the only coin in the top 20, say, on CoinMarketCap that is green. Everything else is red for today. And it's very interesting. I think this does look like a defense of BNB. People are comparing this to an FTX, the FTT token, their FTT token that collapsed. What are your thoughts on this? Do you think Binance is about...
No. So from my perspective, so I'll just give you a bit of market sizing here and why this could make sense, and even something I don't think I've ever mentioned to Dylan, but it's something that I saw, you know, famously Dylan, of course, with Bitcoin Magazine published last November, his predictions on BNB in line with what we saw with FTT. I get it, right? We're dealing with two big exchanges here. Now, at my time at Kraken, when I worked in the strategy, division of Kraken, one of the things we did indeed was look up the market sizes, the market characteristics. So I always had questions about what was going on over at FTX, because there was no business there, right? There was some other business that they were doing, but it wasn't like get a bunch of people in the door and get them trading and slinging shitcoins. Now, with Binance, that's really what is happening. They have a huge user base, like unbelievable user base. And if you think about the Binance coin for a second, look, it doesn't really matter up or down. It should make money when it sinks, because it's just about transaction. It's like loyalty points for transactions, right? You pay fees with the coin, and it's got its own internal market within Binance. They also force companies that want to list on Binance to hold a certain amount. So there's sort of a business backing to this coin. It isn't just like, oh, look, I'm wicked rich and Tom Brady works for us and you borrow my coin and I borrow your coin and we all just be OTC trading together. The difference always is, and then the character of the people, you know, CZ, look, I get why a lot of people would say shitcoiner, right? I get all of that. And that's true. And you don't need to defend him on that. But about what SBF did, like going out of his way to rob people, no, we're not dealing with a thief here, right? Like whatever I have to imagine for what's going on inside of Binance, it's probably in the best faith possible. I just don't imagine. Now, I could be wrong. I have zero proof, right? Other than what I've seen in the market, other than what I've seen the company do, other than what I've seen from CZ himself. I've been lucky enough, you know, over the years before Binance, during Binance, early days of Binance, I've interacted with him a bunch. Look, he's not a criminal. He's not a criminal, right? Now, that doesn't mean he's innocent. It doesn't mean anything. It just, it's not the same scenario. There is a credible reason why the coin would go up. It's just basic economics. It's for trades. People getting out of their positions in shitcoins into Bitcoin makes him money. It does. And it makes the Binance coin money or whatever, right? Like a market stampede also makes that coin, you know, it's transactions. So it's relevant. So more transactions equals the coin does stuff. Now, again, all I'm saying is there is a credible scenario. I have not checked it. I have not analyzed any of this stuff on chain, off chain, forensically, nothing, right? Mm-hmm. It's really just, is CZ a criminal? Because the criminality was a big part of what went wrong in FTX, right? The criminality, the political influence, that's all a big part of the story here. That's why we weren't dealing with an exchange that had millions upon millions of retail users around the world. Binance really does have that. This is not smoke and mirrors. They're not trying to, some people are on exchange. The webpage of Binance.com is one of the top visited webpages on planet Earth, mm-hmm. on the planet. So, it's credible that the coin would buck the trend only because it's like readership at a media company in a way. It can go up during a market crash, right? So,
It could also be, like you were saying, the coins listed on Binance, they need to hold a certain amount of reserves of BNB. Well, those coins themselves could be in trouble. So it wouldn't necessarily have to be Binance as an institution or CZ as an individual. It could be any of the other institutions that have coins.
You got
because
it.
These are all centralized and all that stuff. Also, I remember when FTX went down, I said that I thought Binance had a much more legitimate business, mm-hmm. and they serve a big function in the space being connected with East Asia, right? Being connected with China. And so this is, I don't see it as an FTX, but it's possible. We have to keep watching and see what happens. Any other thoughts?
Yeah, I just, even to reiterate the point of view on the character of
CZ.
Now, again, anything is possible here, but I think he deserves as much good faith assumptions as someone like Brian Armstrong gets, right? Who people just imagine, but I mean that in a complimentary way,
Okay.
No one out there is saying Brian Armstrong is a lying, scamming.
Oh, I do. No.
Okay. Well, then I'm wrong. Okay. Sorry then. Well, then I missed the perception. What I mean to say is I just wouldn't put him in that category.
Well, most people out there, Brian Armstrong is a legitimate businessman. And I don't think that he is, even in the court case or in the lawsuits against Coinbase, it's not being alleged that they were like openly trading with customer funds or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Coinbase was just partaking in this staking scheme. So yeah, I don't see Brian Armstrong as nearly in the same school as SBF for sure.
Yeah, that's all I want to say is that they're we can get clouded as Bitcoiners when we look at industries and the principles of scam coins and all that. I'm totally down with that. I get it. Right, a lot of these things are scams. Bitcoin is a different situation, and I get why people want to reiterate all the time. But even within the world of scam coins and the people who do business over there, there are legitimate, people who want a better world and whose worldview are aligned with the most maxi Bitcoiners out there. And so I just mean to say he's one of those guys, right? That's my perception. CZ is here for the overall Bitcoin standard implementation in the world. And, I don't think he's trying to make a buck off of Binance coin. I think it's good that it worked and it was good for business and probably wants it as marketing. Oh, no, you're muted.
Sorry about that. I think the underlying question is that is Binance coin so over leveraged that it could take down everything? And
that could be. Yeah, so that could definitely be. I mean, there's totally a chance that this thing got way too convoluted, mm-hmm. and Binance is not actually above water if a panic sets in. So I wouldn't say that that's outside of the realm of possibility at all. But in the case of FTX, I would have wanted to test it as far as the industry goes. Like, people ask me the day it crashed, and my point from that moment as it was happening was, this is good. This is very good. Mm. This is excellent. I would have an opposite reaction if it was Binance. I said, no matter what happens with FTX and SBF, we need to rid ourselves of this cancer. It's awful to be in the industry. It's terrible. All of it is terrible. And people who could see what was going on in the data and the markets knew it was, and especially in the fake lobbying, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think in one of these over-leveraged situations, when if they people start getting liquidated, it could hurt Bitcoin. Obviously, people are going to sell their Bitcoin to try to save their coin, other bags that they have. But there is a tipping point where they will rush the other way and they'll sell their shit coins and try to get as much Bitcoin or Tether or whatever as they can at the last minute. So I'll be watching the charts, of course. You guys can check out my Bitcoin and Markets show. We watch the charts constantly. But okay, so any other thoughts on price? Or I wanted to talk about Tornado Cash. Have you been following this story?
Yeah, the arrest, unreal, huh? And remarkably, again, with this fake news, we're gonna fight money laundering. And you know, Christopher Wray's actual quote today from the FBI saying that this is like a must-do situation. Unreal, unreal.
Yeah, so here is a story from CoinCenter. I am not the biggest fan of CoinCenter. I've said ever since the beginning when CoinCenter got started and they're out up there on Capitol Hill trying to educate these people, I knew that they were going to take this education, even though it was well-intentioned by CoinCenter, and they were going to use it to crack down. And I think that's what has kind of happened here. The CoinCenter has dug their own grave for a lot of these crypto tokens. But anyway, the story here for Tornado Cash is they were an independent smart contract on Ethereum, and you could mix your coins there. And it was run by two guys. OFAC came in and said, you know, we don't allow this because there's no KYC going on. That's where the OFAC compliant blocks come in. So Ethereum it's had up to like 80 or 90% compliant blocks at one point, but now I think it's down to like 40%. But every day there's transactions censored on Ethereum because of this OFAC compliance all around this Tornado Cash stuff. So yeah, now it's come out that the indictment has dropped. SEC is indicting these two guys from Tornado Cash because it's a centralized thing. And yes, it is running decentralized on the Ethereum blockchain, kind of like a smart contract there. But these guys had total control over it. They had control over the front end. They had control over the code. They had control over everything. The authorities told them that they needed to start implementing KYC, and they didn't do it. Now, this is the space, I guess, the Bitcoin space is taking this as an affront against privacy. But guys, this a huge difference. There's a reason Satoshi was anonymous. Okay, yes, he published code, but also people know that if you can censor something, the government will censor it. Like, it's not truly decentralized if they can arrest these guys and totally crash the coin, right?
Yeah, but you're even missing, like, you're missing the frame here, Ansel. The frame is not, were they right in doing this and were there better mitigations? It's do they have any credibility in the first place? They don't. I mean, this is Christopher Wray, right? This is what he says today. Today's announcement should remind criminal organizations everywhere in the world that they are neither untraceable nor anonymous. You can't hide from us behind a keyboard, he says. Okay, so they catch no one else for this crime. Nobody gets caught for the money laundering, not even Hunter. No one gets caught for this stuff, okay? And now all of a sudden it's these guys? No. It's what Giacomo Zucco says, no more negotiating around the KYC and complying, and then they didn't do it the right way, or they did it. The whole thing is a scam. Money laundering is beautiful, and we need to bring it back big time, because whatever's going on here, right, when they go out and they say, we're going to get the money launderers, they don't catch them. They catch who they want, and it's political. This is entirely political. You know, we had their lawyers speak at Bitcoin 2023. And, you know, they didn't say it expressly, but all of this stuff goes back to the inability to deputize the banking sector to do the job of law enforcement. And it's the weakness that has pervaded our entire system. We've abandoned Hong Kong to this folly. We gave Hong Kong away for this stuff. FATF, compliance. That was what the security law in Hong Kong was all about. It was money laundering compliance with mainland China. Mm-hmm. And so at what point are we just going to say, what's the cost benefit here? What's the cost benefit, right? We're throwing more people in jail, yet Hunter's okay, everyone's fine. And Meanwhile, whole industries can't grow properly because we're living with mutant handicapped people like Christopher Wray, who'd rather speak at WEF about how great, Remember, he went to WEF, talked about how great big tech censorship is going, right? America has a cancer inside of it, and it has nothing to do with what's gone on with the Tornado Cash people. It's just a symptom. It's political prosecution. It's the same thing that we see.
Yeah. Sliding in here real quick, because we actually had a Twitter Spaces on this exact topic last night with a bunch of people, Jameson Lopp, Seth for Privacy, Zach Herbert, and a couple other people, even Luke Dashier jumped into the conversation. And a lot of points that were brought up, it was very interesting. So Roman and Roman were the two, I'm drawing a blank on the last names. It was Roman Storm and Roman, I forget the other one. I'm always mixed up with Roman Sterlingoff, which is Bitcoin Fog, which is a mixer, which is a separate issue. But the interesting thing with the Tornado Cash of it all is that they were told that they have to implement a KYC exchange or a way to interact with it. They actually did implement a KYC like contract that you can implement. It was actually linked with, who are the people that run, Chainalysis. But the obviously they're saying the reason that they're getting indicted is that they helped the Lazarus hacker group, which is a North Korean group, I believe. But the interesting thing is the Lazarus hacking group wasn't in the indictment one. So it's interesting. They're going after the people that apparently helped them, but they weren't indicting the Lazarus hacker group or named any of the North Korean hackers. And then two, you think the Lazarus hacker group is going to use the KYC version? The code that they wrote, even you could use the KYC, the easy one that's linked with Chainalysis. But the Lazarus hacker group, once they made that contract or it's open source, anyone could use any different variation. We, the three of us, could run a Tornado Cash like DAO or a decentralized, you know, autonomous organization. And that's most likely what the Lazarus hacker group did. So they're going after the developers. And even though that they couldn't prevent this, like this was code that they implemented. And there's a lot of, go ahead.
Stop looking at technology for the solution. The solution is to hire Hunter Biden. If you hire him, you are immune from any of these laws. You just need to hire him. SBF was also good. You could hire SBF to run this stuff for you and it would all go through and then no one would care. It was fine. You can just hire SBF, Hunter Biden, and you can do all of this stuff. All to all of the Bitcoin companies listening right now. You need to hire these people. The laws will not affect you anymore. That's the solution. It's the non-tech solution.
No, I mean, the message we should be giving to these companies is Bitcoin only. That's the message we should be giving to them. Now, I agree with you, Nolan. I think that the entire system is pretty much broken. There is rot or a cancer inside of the financial system. But the answer is not to do centralized solutions and then cry when you get arrested.
The answer is
to be like Satoshi, right? That's the answer. And I can't, it's not an attack on privacy. Privacy is already dead. The way you bring back privacy is you walk in the footsteps of Satoshi. That's how you do it. So I don't like this. I don't think the SEC should come down on them like this or whoever it is, FinCEN or...
Department of Justice, the DOJ.
Okay, so I don't think they should do this. I don't know if they can win. I think these guys might get off. This is just the initial indictment, right? It's not like they've been found guilty of it. We have somewhat of a precedence of this type of thing, maybe with Defense Distributed. It's kind of a First Amendment sort of case. So I think they might win, but I just don't like people saying this is unexpected. This is expected. And Tornado Cash was running a scam. They were.
Okay, I see what you mean. Yeah. On that. Go ahead.
Can I add one more thing real quick? I think the big thing is that to your point, Ansel, that you're saying like privacy is dead. And a lot of people, we were pointing out some of the mistakes that the developers made. One, they were public of who they were and you could verify who they were. And then two, like they also issued a token. So to your point, Ansel, they might go after them for, you know, an unregistered security. I think the DOJ is going to throw everything at them and see what sticks and trying to make an example. I think at the end of the day, they might take a plea deal. So it's, they're guilty, but they might take it on the securities violation versus helping the Lazarus group. So it's kind of one of those things that they throw all these charges and you're going to take a plea deal on one of these. But I definitely think it's a fear tactic. One last quote, Phil Zimmerman had this famous quote that said, If privacy is outlawed, only outlaws will have privacy. And I think that that's a brilliant quote from the Phil Zimmerman, an OG cypherpunk from the 90s. But yeah, I think that there's I agree, Ansel. I think they're going to win in some cases. Like, I don't think that they're going to get hit actually with the public code or this, but I think they might get hit with the financial side of things, taking in money. You know, once they were, like, to your point, they weren't like Satoshi. They were trying to bring in money, which I don't blame them for if they're trying to run a business. But I think they're going to get hit with the money laundering aspect of it all.
Yeah, it's my same argument for altcoins in general. You know, like, I don't want the SEC to come and, you know, arrest all these people or file charges and all this stuff, but it's obviously going to happen. Mm-hmm. That's why we shouldn't cheer. We should, from the get-go, keep people from falling into this trap, right? And once people go down this road and it ends up exactly like how we expected, it shouldn't be like, oh my God. It should be, told you so, do it this way, do it better.
And it could just be our own bias, though, Ansel, because, you know, we're here doing FedWatch. We're here talking about markets. We're here to talk about the financial revolution that Satoshi began, that Bitcoin represents. And I continue to prioritize things. I think if you fix the money, you can make this consequential question of privacy and anonymity and, you know, the reasonable expectation of privacy and all that. That comes after. I think if you try and fix the privacy thing before the money, you're just running your head into a wall, right? So I think Bitcoin fixes the money question before it fixes anything else. Because when you fix the money, you fix, you know, the addendum to that is the brainwashing and the psyops and the systems of control that come with it, which are much more powerful than just, you know, you can't say this or you can't say that. So I continue to see it as a question of priority, and I think Bitcoin just fixes money before it fixes the privacy question. And but again, it could be a bias. That's what this show is about. That's the stuff that I'm interested in, and maybe I'm not enough of a cypherpunk or
I agree with you.
You know, enough into the privacy thing. Although I love it, you know, I think it's next.
I agree with you. You fix the incentives, you fix the pricing structure, and the other things will follow for sure. Okay. Anything else? This was a great conversation. Anything else to add on Tornado Cash? Okay. Let's go to our next segment. This is ETF Watch, ETF update on FedWatch. Here is the list of upcoming dates. The red ones there are the ARK. It was already delayed all the way. The next date for ARK is 11/11. However, the next date for anything coming up for the ETFs is September 1st. That is a week from tomorrow. We could get some major decision or a delay. What's up, Noel?
You were telling me last week, though, that this would be the tea leaves or the straw poll on this good news about the ETF was really baked into last week's
price.
That bottom that we saw come out is what you said last week, and that's where my mind went. When we got off the show, and then I think I went and did some stuff with my kids. So I didn't even see the price till like 5 or 6. And I was like, whoa, we're almost 3,000 US shit coins down.
yeah, the price tells me that the insiders don't necessarily think we're going to get an ETF imminently. There are some dates. If you look down at the bottom there, I put the grayscale dates. These are the next dates where the DC Court of Appeals could come out with a judgment on the grayscale case against the SEC. So it's 8/25, that's tomorrow, or next Tuesday, I think, is the 29th, and then also Friday. So it could be this September 1st, we get a decision on grayscale and we get a decision on the ETFs. That would be crazy because those dates align right there. But I don't think so. I'm seeing a delay. And that actually, to me, makes the probability that we'll get approval out of this batch of ETFs at all, like even up to the halving, I think it goes down dramatically with a single delay. So any thoughts on those dates there, Nolan?
No, that's from the picture that you've been painting, because I haven't been following the dates too closely except for the information that I get from you and being on the show. And I was sort of sure that we would see the September approvals. I thought it was the minute BlackRock got in, I thought we were on the most advanced timeline. And it turns out that, you know, the way I understand it is, in order for them to approve BlackRock now, everyone else has to get approved sort of going forward. So if they can delay the big one, everything else gets carried in that delay over. And it looks like that might be one of the motivations. Why? I mean, we continue to see Bitcoin price and the futures market aggressively traded by some people. And the spot ETF would change that, let's say, leverage over the market, right? Literally mm-hmm. change the leverage equation over the market. And so it looks like there's a bit of pause in order for that to all happen at once, which I'm, you know, sort of fine with. It doesn't bother me, other than it sort of resets a bit of my expectations and makes me even more curious about what people are seeing who are making these decisions.
Yeah, the Bloomberg team has updated some of their odds. So this is the Bloomberg ETF team. They're following the Bitcoin spot ETF. They're following the Ethereum stuff, futures stuff that people are talking about, and also the Grayscale case. And their updated odds for Grayscale was they are given a 70% chance of winning its case. Then Joe Carlisseri, a lawyer in the space, well-known lawyer in Bitcoin, and he said that, you know, once Grayscale wins, that doesn't really matter because that will start another clock that Grayscale will have to go march through. It's not like they win in DC Court of Appeals mm-hmm. and then the next day they're an ETF or anything like that. So, yeah. Who knows when these dates are, but the big date is next Friday. That's going to be all talk next week. Everyone's going to be talking about the ETFs coming up next week. And then after that, we're going into October and November. So,
big day. I can still remember the 2017, the initial Winklevii ETF mm-hmm. decision in like March 20, and everyone thought then, 6 years later.
Yeah, I'll remember that always because I was in the hospital room with my son being born.
Oh, wow.
And they came out and denied it, and the market went like, you know, one of those Darth Maul candles. It went up and then down and up and down. So, I'll forever remember that day.
Wow. So that would have been, March or February 2017, huh?
Yeah, it was March 10th of 2017.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. All right. So next up, we have a BRICS update. The big update out of the BRICS is that they're bringing in a bunch of new countries. I have a list of the countries they're bringing in. It's Argentina, Saudi Arabia, UAE, Iran, Egypt, and Ethiopia. So this is kind of a big package of Middle Eastern countries, and then Argentina. You were talking about this on your show this morning, Nolan. Mm-hmm. Do you have any comments on the countries that they brought in?
Yeah, what I see with the alignment with these real petro producers is what surprises me, to see Iran, Saudi, and UAE on the same team.
Yeah,
I think that's a very powerful message and a very positive one, really a positive one. I know it's hard to see through the tribalism sometimes, but as I understand, this is Peter Zeihan stuff. So you always got to watch out with Peter Zeihan for what's, you know, glowy psyop and what's real. But a lot of it is true, right? That's how the glowiest PSYOP stuff works.
Yeah, and also on that point, Egypt and Ethiopia, they are fighting over the Ethiopian water.
Yeah, the water. The dam. Yeah, the dam. Yeah. So that's also interesting. And that's the exact right thing that I'm going for here, to watch rivals participate in something that you would not imagine they would have any incentive to cooperate on. So whatever's pushing them together must be pretty bad, or they must really want it. And that's exactly what I see and what we've seen for a while, of course. It's something that I think, you know, Trump treated Saudi very well over the time that he was president. He let MBS get away with what looked like murder, right? And sort of covered for him, which I don't know anything about that. Other than if I would imagine, you know, MBS owed him something, right? But the thing he never gave Saudi was nuclear power. And it seems like we've been negotiating nuclear power with Saudi as a strategic, like we deny it to them, and just like in Iran, and even in Iran, like it turns out, and this is from Peter Zeihan, that the Russia sanctions had a weird effect on Iran and were actually really effective in crippling them. So they're super motivated. And it turns out that even a lot of the fuel they already had for their reactors was degraded, leftover, not weapons grade, not even close to weapons grade, never going to be capable of going to weapons grade. So indeed, the hawks on our end that were like, oh, don't give anything to Iran, were already probably wrong. It looked like it was legitimate what they were saying. They wanted energy. Saudi wanted energy. So what I love about all of this is you get rivals who are not sub-members, not whatever. They're going to be full members. They're going to be able to use whatever this payment rail system is, right? Whatever this payment system is. And they're going to be able to settle. And what I imagine is going to happen, and what I want to see happen, is that these places aren't only bound by oil anymore, that they actually are able to do the nuclear thing. And we're going to get, I guess you can say, movement on nuclear, which I see in the BRICS agreement. I see it through the BRICS agreement that this is possible, because that's what came from China to Saudi, to Iran, to UAE. They're going to get help. What they need is nuclear energy, and it looks like they're going to get it through BRICS. So that's amazing.
Yeah, great comments there. I pulled up this article that we're seeing on the screen because right when this was yesterday or 2 days ago, I saw this headline. I was like, no way that they actually talked about Bitcoin at the BRICS. And yes, this was on CoinMarketCap, their news section, and this is not true. This is fake news. They did not specifically talk about using Bitcoin, even though Bitcoin is a perfect solution for them.
No. So what you're seeing here, my guess is what you're seeing here. So it's not exactly fake news. What you're seeing here is that 2 months ago, where this thing was created, they said it might be on the agenda. Okay. So someone, the headline is fake news, but it's based on real news, which is it might be on the agenda, and we don't know if it isn't yet, right? We don't know if they haven't discussed it, because it was part of a preliminary part of the agenda. Now, I've always believed that Putin is sneaky about his understanding of Bitcoin, and that just given that he comes from the spy world and understood cryptography, of course, being the main tool of spies, where it comes from historically and all that. So you just kind of got to imagine that he recognized what Bitcoin was capable of early. And indeed, he said it several times. He showed a really astute understanding of what we were dealing with here. Even when people talked about, you know, his response that he gave to national cryptocurrencies, and he said it's an oxymoron, right? The point of them is they're decentralized. They can't be nationalized. So I imagine they'll talk about it. I really do. I just imagine it. Now, at the same time, we saw that there was a Chinese guy yesterday arrested for mining, a government official.
Yeah. Yeah. Sentenced to life in prison, I think.
To life.
Well, we do have the other kind of currency that has been floating around. Of course, de-dollarization is the buzzword here for the BRICS. But they've been talking about a gold-backed currency. And if you go to the next slide, I think I have a little headline from this gold-backed currency. And India has poured cold water on this once again. Mm-hmm. I have from this article, from this headline, I just want to read a few lines here for it. So Foreign Secretary Vinay Quatra, downplayed the policies of BRICS countries developing a common currency. In a special briefing with the media, Quatra stated that the BRICS deliberations have focused on boosting trade in national currencies instead of developing a common currency. Quote, the substantive part of trade and economic exchanges and discussions have been part of BRICS discussions have so far in a major way focused on how to increase trade in respective national currencies, which is considerably different from a common currency concept, he said. He continued, you would know that common currency discussions have several prerequisites before we can even talk about a common currency framework. The discussion framework in BRICS and the substance of that discussion framework in the BRICS have focused principally on trade with national currencies. So again, pouring cold water on this gold-backed currency idea. I don't know who is pushing it. It's the dollar derangement syndrome people out there. It could be people actually that want to help China and the Chinese yuan from crashing. They're trying to talk up this de-dollarization when it is not happening, okay? The BRICS are not going to launch a gold-backed currency. I have another quick excerpt here from, this is a Cointelegraph story, and dang it, this webpage is not loading for me right now, but it was Lynn Alden, and she was talking about, oh, here we go. Lynn Alden casts doubt on a proposal that would see five countries work together to develop a common BRICS currency, arguing it will likely struggle to get off the ground and fail to dethrone the US dollar. Alden argued the model is flawed. Quote, backing a fractional reserve banking system with gold only works temporarily because the currency units multiply more quickly than the gold does, she said. Instead, Alden sees a more likely outcome to be that BRICS nations lessen its reliance on the US dollar for border cross-border payments by increasing their own currency or use of their own currencies for trade, particularly the Chinese yuan. So this gold-backed currency idea, if you see it out there, it's people trying to sell you a load of crap. The gold-backed currency is not going to happen. Also, by adding, like what you were touching on there, Nolan, is these kind of enemies getting in the group together, the Saudis and the Iranians, the Egyptians and the Ethiopians. But to me, that just says that cooperation is less likely.
Yeah,
they're bringing in arch rivals like China and India, arch rivals. That so there's less coordination that's going to happen. And to launch a gold-backed currency, to launch a single currency, you're going to have massive coordination. Mm-hmm. So what? Mm-hmm. I'll stop.
Well, which is the perfect storm for us in 2024, because all we need as Bitcoiners is people who are saying openly in the public, I want a new system other than petrodollar settlement. Like I want some freedom. I want some choice. So them just expressing that type of appetite is enough to start shifting things. I've always predicted there was no way they were ever going to come up with a coin. They were ever going to be successful. It was ever going to work, right? That's what I've been saying forever. Even on the gold, what we're seeing here that's awesome is that it's exposing the argument around how the gold price is manipulated. A little bit what we were just talking about with the Bitcoin futures and the Bitcoin spot and what Bitcoiners and, you know, Bitcoiners and their, you know, incredible level of financial literacy have come to understand that you can manipulate these markets. And it's one of the reasons why Bitcoiners have abandoned gold, because the physical custodianship of gold opens a lever for intense corruption to enter the system. And it has been there, and we've observed it for 80 years, which is why gold can't do its job, right? It can't do the thing that they're saying it's doing. And the Chinese know that, and the Indians certainly know that. So that's what I read when I heard the Indian comment. Basically, they're saying, like, okay, if we do gold, then what about US manipulation of the gold price? We just have to live with that. Like, and the US can manipulate the gold price. They can very easily. It's not hard. So can England, so can France, and a lot of other countries that they don't necessarily want to deal with, right? Do we even know how much gold America has? We don't, like, really, right? We don't really know what's in the Federal Reserve in New York. We don't really, Fort Knox is apparently nothing, and there's way more in other places. I mean, do we really know? I don't know if we do.
I mean, we know the balance sheet. That's about it. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's not everything, right? There's treasure. There's. I mean, literal treasure. That's what they call it, right? Like treasury and things the country has amassed over the years that they can just, right? The point is, it can be manipulated. I think a lot of Indian people are aware of that the price is manipulated. And that's exactly the kind of financial literacy we need to propagate in the world in order to arrive at a Bitcoin center. We have to understand that at a global mass scale, economic crimes have been undertaken to suppress and manipulate the price of gold. And therefore, what you think of as gold is no longer what you think of as gold. And even the beginning of a conversation of creating a market on that is unserious because it's too corrupted. Would you build a house on top of a cartoon? would you build it on top of a drawing? Right? Like, it's not real. So you can't do it. And that's exactly the world Bitcoiners need to find themselves in 2024, with, 70% of the global trade and commodity production saying, we need a new settlement machine. And this thing here could work, but it's also not going to because there's no way they're going to make it work. Meanwhile, America is not credible anymore. We've thrown out our entire justice system. We got a mugshot of our president coming today. Do we have a mugshot? Is it here? Where's the mugshot, right? Where's the mugshot? So we got mugshots of political opponents going on. So luckily, the rest of the world is saying they're not going to wait around for America to fix it. But I'm very bullish on America. I think we're going to figure it all out. And I think we're going to back our dollar with Bitcoin, and we're going to get the rest of the world to open up their eyes to possibilities. And indeed, one day, I think there will be a BRICS-ish something like national currencies mixed with Bitcoin and da 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 da. But it won't be gold. It'll be Bitcoin. So yeah, we're well on the way. I mean, I can't think of a better scenario than a completely laughably incredulous American government that's obsessed with its own stupid things while the rest of the world is saying, hey, we're leaving you. We're not sitting around. We're willing to go with this fake gold from China over you guys. That's how much we think about you. And, well, you know.
Great points. About the local currencies, using local currencies, there's a reason why money is convergent, right? Because there's network effects for using the same currency. If everyone uses the same currency, you have accounting all in the same currency. You don't have transaction costs when you are changing, you know, FX swaps between currencies. You don't have any currency risk. So there's an advantage to using one currency. If they want to start using local currencies instead of the one single dollar, then they're going to incur more cost into business. They don't quite understand this. I think that they are trying to, they have dollar derangement syndrome. And I'll go back to that, that they think that the dollar has been used to hold down their economies. They've been sold that line, which is not the case. They are going to just increase the cost to their economies and all of that. The second thing too about the gold, to follow on from your comments there on the gold, is that gold, these economies, they don't want to mark their economies to market. Okay, think about China. They definitely do not want to mark their economy to market because it would be, you know, 25% lower or even 50% lower.
Yeah,
that's would happen if you introduce gold. Yeah. So any other thoughts on this, Noel?
No, I agree. I didn't even think about the obfuscation of their own financial data, because indeed, the way I see national fiat money going is food stamps. It's political. It's going to be expressly political money. Political money is coming in the form of give me your data. I'll give you some cash to pay some bills. And it'll work because it won't be this CBDC thing where here's just random money, right? It'll be actual extinguishable money, let's say, right? It'll be money that will extinguish and you won't see it anymore. And then we'll go to pay bills and all. People will do it, right? Some people will just do it. There's no way.
All right. So speaking of China, BRICS, China, they're kind of the heavyweight of the BRICS, which I also think that the BRICS would be better off getting rid of China for
at this point,
just like this. So this is a story. Originally, it was out of, how do you say that news outlet? Zaxing, something like that. It's a Chinese financial press outlet. This was picked up again by Nikkei Asia because the original was paywalled. So this is the one from Nikkei Asia. And I wanted to read the first couple paragraphs here. So China's local government financing arms. So not the central government. These are the local, like, district governments. And the real estate industry that supports them have long been viewed as two important drivers of the nation's economy. Now, after years of rapid growth, the property sector has hit the skids, triggering a liquidity crisis for mutual and provincial borrowers that poses risks to the country's financial system. Now, this is the kicker right here. More than 80% of local government financing vehicles do not have enough operating cash to cover interest payments on their debt. Just the interest payments, not the principal. These are 80% of these local government financing vehicles in China do not have enough cash to pay the interest on their debt right now. And this was found. This was a finding estimates made by UBS, so a Swiss bank not a Hong Kong bank or anything like that. So whatever, this is 80% of local governments cannot pay the interest payments on their debt. These entities are state-owned companies set up to finance infrastructure projects, building highways and bridges. And we've talked about this overproduction in their infrastructure. That's basically their growth model, and it's ending. So making the crisis worse is the fact that trillions of dollars in local government borrowings take the form of hidden debt, which the State Council defined in 2018 as separate from on-budget borrowings, but carrying at least an implicit guarantee of repayment using government funds or some illegal backing. At a July meeting, the Communist Party Politburo emphasized the need to defuse local debt risks and proposed for the first time the formulation and implementation of a package of local government debt reduction programs. The pledge demonstrated that central banks, central governments' determination to reduce or restructure the overhang of hidden debt, So that is the main thing there. I've read that it's 10 to 12 trillion dollars worth, not yuan. That would be just $1 trillion, but it's 10 to 12 trillion dollars worth of this bad debt out there.
A year of their GDP.
Pretty much, yeah.
Like a year of all of their economic output.
Yep. And they can't make the interest payments right now.
Unreal. So that's the whole finance model of the country.
Yes. Real estate. They outlawed something back in 2018 or 19. And it was around these local government financing vehicles, mm-hmm. Because it was straight up a Ponzi scheme.
And they just said build a new development and then a new development and a new development.
Yeah. They're like, we can't base half of our economy off these obvious Ponzi schemes. So they outlawed the way they are raising money, but now it's coming back to bite them because it's starting to unwind. It's pretty crazy. But that is the last news item I have. Do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, you continue to look at the numbers in China, and it's amazing. I was never that bullish on China when everyone was saying it was written in the stars and preordained that the whole world was going to move to the successful, dynamic Chinese economy. I'd been there enough to know that. I'd rather have India as an ally going forward, which it looks like America has. You know, India landing a robot or a craft on the moon
yesterday. That was cool.
Amazing. And even seeing Vivek do so well in the U.S. presidential election, you know, he's a credible presidential candidate now. And not that he's born in America, but you know, Indian name so there's a lot going on that I'm positive about, and the China thing to me was, I just hope they can survive, not the Communist Party, but I just hope the people are able to get through this in a way that I think is in line with the pleasant progress that we've seen there over the past 40 or 50 years. You don't want to see them lose all these gains, right? Because this was one of the worst places on earth to be for 100 years. And it's finally like a livable, looks like they've finally got something for their people that's worth preserving, except for the totalitarian cesspool that runs it.
Yeah.
So hopefully this all leads to positive things. I know Vivek, what I saw, you know, he ended any chance of a war in India almost single-handedly, by the way, by saying, you know, even articulating that right now it's a priority because of the chips in Taiwan. Mm-hmm. But the minute the chips are in America, you know,
yeah,
it's not a priority. So if I was on the Chinese side, I'd be saying, well, is that really what Americans are saying? And I would just wait. I would just wait, right? So which is the right approach. So I think we're going to make it through any trouble with them, and they got their own troubles. So,
yeah. There is definitely silver linings to a lot of these storm clouds that we're seeing out there, but it does feel like the end of Q3 is turning out to be a little bit more exciting than just a couple weeks ago. I thought, oh man, the end of Q3 is going to be nothing, but now the end of Q3 looks like it could be very exciting. So everyone needs to stay tuned. Okay, guys, that's it for Fed Watch. Make sure you check out Nolan's stuff, Count BTC on Twitter. He does the breakup every morning with Bitcoin Magazine and his own YouTube channel. Check out my stuff, bitcoinandmarkets.com. Telegram, YouTube, Rumble, all that stuff for Bitcoin and markets. And I'll see you guys on the next one. Bye.
What is up, audio listeners? Thank you for enjoying another episode of FedWatch. Down in the show notes, you will find all the appropriate links to our social media, the original version of this podcast, and community links. Also, check out bitcoinandmarkets.com, where I put out a free weekly newsletter every Friday. And there you can also help support the show by signing up to become a paid member. See you next time.
My fellow plebs, Bitcoin Magazine is headed back to Amsterdam in 2023. We're returning to Westergaast to build on this historic success and continue our mission of global hyper-Bitcoinization. Bitcoin Amsterdam was the biggest European Bitcoin event in history, held from October 12th to the 14th at Westergaast Event Forum, offering 6 different on-site locations and 3 fully programmed stages. We are absolutely stoked to catapult the European community to the global stage. Tickets are at their lowest prices right now. Lock yours in at b.tc/conference/Amsterdam. That's b.tc/conference/Amsterdam.